from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's just about time to have a million-dollar match pledge drive just to get a parking space for the people who work at the radio station at the Le Show Dome. Don't you think? I know I think so. Please give. So in the why didn't I think of this department, we begin this week's broadcast. Why didn't I think of this? Indeed. Why didn't we all think of this? Random drug testing of police officers is being considered by the British government only a year after it initially rejected the idea. Minister Hazel Blears. Sorry. Something about the word Hazel makes me laugh. Said the police advisory board will review the issue next month. She said, we'll be very interested to see what comes out of the board and we'll look at the issue again then. That follows suggestions from the Police Superintendents Association of England and Wales that drug testing should be introduced among police officers. Why didn't I think of that? Kevin Morris, president of the association, will tell the group's conference next week that officers are ethically bound to accept random tests since they enforce Britain's drug laws. We owe it to the public to show it quite clearly and categorically that police are not taking illicit drugs, he said. I think we have to be realistic that with over 130,000 police officers, some will be tempted, unquote. Why did the Police Federation, I guess, represents police officers, not as enthusiastic about the idea. Compulsory drug tests for the military were introduced 9 years ago. A criminologist who has written a book about drug taking among police, David Wilson, says some officers talked openly about taking drugs in Amsterdam and at raves, and some would advise dealers what to do if caught. Their drug taking was quite clearly a subculture. He said the officers being recruited are from a 20-something generation, which is quite open about drug taking. What's with these kids? Cannabis, marijuana, ecstasy, and cocaine were among the most commonly used drugs by police officers. The problem with a random and mandatory program of drug testing, says one expert, is that in prisons it has changed the drug use from marijuana to barbiturates. Since marijuana stays in your system for 28 days, barbiturates leave within 48 hours. Still, I insist, ladies and gentlemen, why didn't I think of this? Drug tests for cops. Let's all do it. Let's all get together and give. Hello, welcome to the show.
To the land of the beautiful queens. I'm going back home to my baby. I'm going back to New Orleans. Gonna see Nene, my pa Ran, Kuzan, and my ma and pa. Gonna plant my feet on Rampart Street and be there for the Mardi Gras. I've been to Cuba, South America way. I've been to Europe, Mexico is okay. Over in France, the chicks are really fine. I get my kicks below the Mason-Dixon line. Going back home, T98, never more will I roam. Gonna get my fill of gumbo filet, cause New Orleans is my home. Back home,
T98 to the land of the beautiful queens. I'm going back home to my baby. I'm going back to New Orleans. Gonna get me crawfish, jambalaya, red beans, and some fine pralines. Gonna get some loving that will satisfy back home in New Orleans.
To mama a long, long time ago. Mama said, son, oh, don't you ever let her go. But I didn't listen. I just didn't know better. When she walked out the door like a fool, I just let her. Better do something, better do it right quick. Living without her, oh, just making me sick. And when I find her, I'm gonna get down on my knees. Oh, and say to my baby, please, please, please. Mama was right. Mama was right, I know it now. Mama was right. Gotta find my baby somehow. Should've listen to my mama, I made a big mistake. Now I'm paying the price, I got me a big heartache. Must have been crazy, oh, but what I'm thinking of. I don't even know the ABCs of love. Mama was right, mama was right, I feel the pain. I keep calling my baby's name. And when I find her, I'm gonna get down on my knees. Oh, she gave me everything a man could ever need. Mama was right, I know it now. Oh, mama was right. Gotta find my baby somehow. Somebody help me. I'm hurting in my heart. Gotta find my baby. Make a brand new start. Oh, baby, I need you. I need you back home. Baby, baby, baby. Mama was right, I feel the pain. Oh, mama was right, I keep calling my baby's name. Should've listened to my mama, every single word she said. If I don't find my baby, just give me up for dead.
Yeah, listen to your mama. And listen to me, because hello, welcome to the show. I'm Harry Shearer from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. Yeah, that's them out there right now. You can hear them. That's one of them. Ladies and gentlemen, American officials said this weekend about 50 munitions sites in Iraq containing explosives similar to those used in the recent major bombings had only light security and were poorly guarded. That's a good idea. Why didn't I think of that? An official from the United States Central Command speaking on condition of anonymity. Why wouldn't he want his name published in the New York Times, do you think? acknowledged that the American-led military operation in Iraq did not have enough troops to guard effectively all 2,700 Iraqi munition sites that have been identified. This is while Don Rumsfeld and everybody else in the administration says, we got plenty of troops. We don't need more troops. We got enough troops. Every ammunition dump has some level of security, said the central command official. Some level of security. This radio station has some level of security. Come on in. But he added, increasing demands on American troops have meant that the military has had to reserve the heaviest security for munition sites containing weapons like rocket-propelled grenades. It could be used most readily against Allied forces. That left other sites with larger weapons, like bombs and missiles, less securely guarded, or guarded by Iraqis, who may be prone to bribes. Now let's watch the president with that in mind. We got plenty of troops. We got plenty of troops, but the British, our comrades in arms, may have a different view of the situation. Britain agreed last week, we've just gone through, whatever you want to call that week. Britain agreed during the last part of it to send more troops to Iraq in response to the growing violence against the occupation forces. Underscoring British resolve to stay the course, a 120-person strong company of the 2nd Battalion, the Light Infantry, see, I'd move the heavy infantry in, Mao, but that's just me, is flying from Cyprus to spearhead a new deployment, which will join the force of 11,000 in southern Iraq. The Defense Secretary, Jeff Hoon, is expected to announce that about 1,200 soldiers, will be sent at first. And defense sources say another 1,800 will be put on standby to join the mission. The decision was made on the day a British bomb disposal specialist was killed. Ian Rimmel died and his local bodyguard was injured when they were ambushed. So somebody needs more troops, but it's not us. It's our friends, the Brits. American military intelligence and law enforcement officials cannot yet determine whether the recent spate of major bombing attacks in Iraq are part of a coordinated campaign. They're wrestling with several competing theories about who's behind the continuing violence. Even the most experienced and senior intelligence and law enforcement officials say they're unsure about the degree to which the Saddam Hussein former supporters, now organized in cells, the criminals freed from Iraqi jails, and the Arab fighters from other countries, the degree to which these ideologically disparate forces have made temporary marriages of convenience. There are recently seized documents suggesting that remnants of the government of Saddam Hussein are abandoning the party's traditional secularism and reaching out to Islamist radicals. Weren't we told that they'd done that long since? Yes, we were. When the question was raised, Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, aren't they? No, they're not. Documents suggesting that remnants of the Ba'athist Saddam Hussein government are abandoning the party's traditional secularism and reaching out to Islamist radicals. Now they're doing it. Thank us. The methods used in the attacks on the United Nations and the Jordanian embassy suggest that former members of the Iraqi military or paramilitary were involved. And attacks aimed at the convoys of occupying forces may reflect the expertise of terrorist organizations based outside Iraq, such as Hezbollah. But our best intelligence guys can't figure it out yet. They figured all this stuff out before the war. More about the coalition of the willing in a moment, but this question of intelligence, of course, has been roiling the Brits far more than us. We seem to be fat and happy with the idea that whatever it was we did well now, because now it's done. But the Brits are pawing over it in great detail. Lord Hutton, a distinguished jurist, funny he doesn't look jurist, has been presiding over a wide-ranging inquiry. Really remarkable. Imagine this, in the United States, if top-level members of the CIA and the people right below them were testifying in open testimony and contradicting each other about whether the publicly presented intelligence on Iraq's weapons posture was accurate enough, accurate or not. Well, that's what's been going on in Britain. The Hutton inquiry. This week, Brian Jones, no, kids, don't get excited. Not the guy from the Rolling Stones. He's still dead. Brian Jones is a senior British government intelligence official, deeply involved in the production of the dossier on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. He accused the British government of not sexing up, dig this, over-egging the threat posed by Saddam Hussein and ignoring concerns about claims made in the document. Brian Jones described how the shutters came down, preventing experts on chemical and biological weapons from expressing widespread disquiet about the language and assumptions in the British government's dossier issued almost a year ago. He told the Inquiry that he and fellow intelligence officials regarded as nebulous the claim that Iraqi forces could deploy chemical and biological weapons within 45 minutes, the heart of the controversy in Britain, or as they say, the controversy in Britain. The claim, he said, that claim, the 45-minute claim, came from a single but secondary source whose purpose might have been to influence rather than inform British intelligence agencies. Those damn defectors with their tricky stories. My concerns, he said, were that Iraq's chemical weapons and biological weapons capabilities were not being accurately represented in all regards in relation to the available evidence. There was no evidence that significant production had taken place either of chemical warfare agent or chemical weapons, says Brian Jones. He went as far as to suggest that Iraq possessed few, if any, weapons of mass destruction. I can't say that today. In the proper meaning of the term, he said he would struggle to place chemical weapons and many biological weapons in the category of weapons of mass destruction, he added. His top chemical warfare expert had expressed concern about the tendency to, quote, over-egg certain assessments in relation to the production of chemical warfare agents and weapons since 1998. He could not point to any solid evidence of such production. How come this wasn't in the news here? Who am I? Meanwhile, Dr. David Kelly, who was the weapons expert who apparently committed suicide in the wake of being outed by the British government as a source for a BBC report that there was disquiet among intelligence officials, his family wants British Prime Minister Tony Blair to be called back for cross-examination in the next phase of that Hutton inquiry to start next Monday, specifically to be asked about his role in the strategy for naming Dr. Kelly. He categorically denied to the press that he had authorized the leaking of the name of Dr. Kelly, but he said he had four meetings at the inquiry. He admitted he had four meetings at which the naming strategy was discussed, so you might want to keep an eye on that. On the other hand, you might just want to go back to sleep. The father of a soldier from Comfort, Texas, ladies and gentlemen, killed in an ambush in Iraq, the same ambush that Jessica Lynch survived, said that Lynch's million-dollar book deal announced this past week will taint the memory of the soldiers killed in the ambush. Pretty severe, isn't it, says Randy Keel. That she makes money off the death of my son and off the deaths of so many others. Bitter, bitter, bitter gentleman. Jessica Lynch did, in fact, sign a million-dollar book deal this week. Story about a car wreck in a war zone. And her ghostwriter is Rick Bragg, or her co-writer. I think he's not a ghostwriter because his name is going to be on the book. Rick Bragg, who left the New York Times earlier this year when it was revealed that a story bearing his byline had basically been written by an intern. And Rick Bragg had spent all of one night at a hotel room in the place where the Dateline appeared for the story to so that he could ethically use the Dateline according to New York Times rules. That's the guy who's going to be writing the book with Jessica Lynch. That's cool. We need more troops. We don't need more troops. The British need more troops. The British government announced a review of British troop levels. The foreign secretary has warned of strategic failure. Well, that's not strategic failure. unless more soldiers are dispatched to ensure security and reconstruction. It would be serious if it happened over here, wouldn't it? Back to the Hutton inquiry for 1 minute. One of the other basic items in dispute is who owned the dossier? This is government speak. The head of British, well, the equivalent of the CIA. Actually not. The head of the Joint Intelligence Committee that supposedly wrote the intelligence dossier warning of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction stance, John Scarlett, said in testimony that he owned his agency, his Joint Intelligence Committee. Well, that would be intelligence people. They owned the dossier. But this week a memo came out, a meeting chaired by the very same man, states that ownership lay with number 10. That means Tony Blair, number 10 Downing Street, Tony Blair. Political influence over the intelligence? You got to be kidding. The United States said this week it would not meet an April 2004 deadline for destroying 45% of its chemical weapons stockpile. Hey, let Hans Blix do it. The Pentagon has asked the world body that governs the destruction, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, for a delay until December 2007. Environmental, safety, and other problems at high-temperature incinerators have made it impossible to meet the deadline, the Pentagon said. We can't destroy our weapons of mass destruction on time. Other problems in high-temperature incinerators. You think Saddam had problems with his high-temperature incinerators? A former U.S. commander for the Middle East, who still consults for the State Department, blasted the Bush administration's handling of post-war Iraq this week, saying it lacked a coherent strategy, a serious plan, and sufficient resources. That's retired Marine General Anthony Zinni, who preceded Tommy Franks over there. There is no strategy or mechanism for putting the pieces together, Zinni says. We're in danger of failing. There's that word. There's that F word again. Zinni's comments were especially striking because he endorsed President Bush in the 2000 campaign shortly after retiring from active duty. He serves as an advisor to the State Department on anti-terror initiatives in Indonesia and the Philippines. He was also against the Iraq invasion before it happened. But as Colin Powell said on the Sunday Yak Shows, we got plenty of advisors. Any other news from outside the bubble, you ask? A secret report for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, our Joint Chiefs of Staff now, we're back across on our side of the pond, lays the blame for setbacks in Iraq on a flawed and rushed war planning process that limited the focus for preparing for post-Saddam operations. The report said the search for weapons of mass destruction was planned so late in the game it was impossible for CENTCOM to carry out the mission effectively. Insufficient U.S. government assets existed to accomplish the mission, according to the classified briefing. A copy was obtained by the conservative newspaper The Washington Times. The report says President Bush approved the overall war strategy for Iraq in August of last year. That was when his chief of staff, Andy Card, said, we don't introduce new products in August. The Joint Chiefs report reveals deficiencies in the planning process. It says planners were not given enough time to put together the best blueprint for the reconstruction phase. The report doesn't name any individual, although most war planning was conducted by General Franks. The Joint Chiefs report states weapons of mass destruction elimination and exploitation planning efforts did not occur early enough in the process to allow CENTCOM to effectively execute the mission. Because this was a new mission area. Pentagon spokesman declined to comment on the report. Former head of the EPA, Christy Todd Whitman, says the White House never told her to lie about air quality near Ground Zero, but she conceded she did not object when words of caution were pulled out of public statements. We didn't want to scare people, she said. All right, the coalition. Let's get to the coalition, ladies and gentlemen. Because I'm bugged by the coalition here. How many members in the coalition? That's all I want to know. That's just a simple question. So originally there was a list of some 30 nations. You remember that list? I think it was read over, on this broadcast by Ralph, perhaps. So this week, as the U.S. handed over responsibility for an area in southern Iraq to a Polish division, heretofore to be known as the Polish division, even though it's commanded by a Polish general but includes troops from several other countries, here is General Ricardo Sanchez, head of, he's the new Tommy Franks. And here he is at the ceremony where the handover occurred.
This is a moment where the international community has stepped up and turned this from a nine-nation coalition to a 30-nation coalition.
Excuse me? From a what? From a what to a what? That's what he said. That's General Sanchez this week saying we had a nine-nation coalition until the Polish division took over. Don't argue with me. Argue with General Sanchez. General Ricardo Sanchez, ladies and gentlemen. And what about those Iraqi police who are being trained in Hungary? You read about that. You heard about that. News from outside the bubble, from the Glasgow, Scotland Sunday Herald. Pentagon planners intend to train 28,000 Iraqi police recruits, teach them the rudiments of democratic policing at an isolated Hungarian air base at Tazar, 125 miles southwest of Budapest. But the plan has run into difficulties in Hungary. In a laconic statement, Hungarian government spokesman Zoltán Gál said, Hungary is interested in the restoration of public order and safety in Iraq, but as there has been no official American request for the Iraqi police training, there is no Hungarian reply either. Should, however, Hungary receive such a request, the government and parliament would consider it. In making a decision, issues of national security would also have to be considered. Peter Megyesi, Hungary's prime minister, was less enthusiastic. The American plan to train 25 to 30,000 Iraqis is out of the question. Well, we can discuss it, can't we? Out of the question? That doesn't mean it's out of the... Ladies and gentlemen, I am shocked. Somebody has stolen one of my ideas. Again, remember a few years ago I said that the cure for the problem of privacy invasion and the selling of your... The gathering and selling of your private and personal information was not to be found in privacy law, but in copyright law. That we should all copyright our lives. John Dayton, a Harvard Business School professor, says this week, we should capitalize on the value of our personal information and get something in return. In a recent working paper entitled Market Solutions to Privacy Problems? Of course, he doesn't owe me any money, because I didn't copyright the idea of copywriting your life. The Bush administration announced this week carbon dioxide from industrial emissions is not a pollutant. It's a vegetable. That's just me kidding around, the last part. The first part is them kidding around. And we have, I believe, ladies and gentlemen, one more quote that I need to share with you at the top of this week's stuff. Do you know who James Dobson is? He's the head of the... Focus on the Family, a major Christian conservative organization headquartered in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And he was on Larry King's broadcast this week, inveighing against the gays and gay marriage and the gay this and the gay that. And then he took some phone calls.
My name's Linda, and I just want to say what an honor it is to talk with Dr. Dobson. I'm a homeschool mom. I'm using reproduction McGuffey readers as part of our curriculum. They're packed full of scripture and moral values. And my question for him is, where and why did we stop as a nation teaching our children about God and his role in the founding of our country and in the founding fathers' lives?
Well, it's just been a slow leak. And as I've said today, the courts have played a major role in that change. The McGuffey readers are wonderful. That goes back to the mid-1800s. And that's how most children learned to read at that time. And in some states, we had better than a 90% legitimacy rate. I mean, a 90%, what's the word? They could all read. And
Literacy.
Illiteracy is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's the word. Thanks, Reverend Dobson.
Baby, I feel good from the moment I arrive.
This is Le Show. Little media news for you, ladies and gentlemen. You noticed that over the last decade or two, your network evening news broadcasts have moved earlier in the evening. You ever wondered why? Here's what John Rash, director of broadcast negotiations for a major advertising agency, says. While a nightly prime time newscast, that would be like at 7 o'clock, does provide a commendable service to the citizenry, it does not offer much in terms of service to the shareholders, which, of course, is the first order of business. At 7 p.m., a news show would create a lead-in audience to the rest of prime time that would be just too demographically disparate for the rest of prime time programming. Meaning, translation, too many old people would be watching. We don't need them. Unquote. No, I'm not quoting him there. Oh, by the way, correction. Last week I said Bob Livingston, former representative from Louisiana, was the guy who had described his affair in his middle-aged years as a youthful indiscretion. It was, of course, Congressman Henry Hyde of Illinois, a seven-year-long affair that ended when he was 47, that he described as a youthful indiscretion. Back to media news. Larry King is in talks to appear at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace in late October when Celine Dion takes some time off from her headlining duties. This is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. King reportedly has a showbiz itch to do something along the lines of an evening with Larry King. God, that sounds like an expensive ticket, unless you get to experience it for free.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace cordially reminds you that the use of flash photography at any time during the following show is strictly prohibited. And now, get ready, because things like this only happen in Las Vegas. Ladies and gentlemen, you're among the first people anywhere in the world privileged to pay for the privilege of seeing an evening with Larry King. Here's your star, Larry King.
Hey, Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello. How you doing? Here come old Larry in a Vegas showroom. He got Swingin' House Band. You got special guest stars. You got Dewey Gordon and Nancy Grace. One thing I can tell you is this must be the place. Come together. Oh, yeah. How y'all doing? Where you from? I can't hear you. Here come the promos. I got pills of garlic. I got wife so pretty that she just couldn't be here. Out on the lobby is the biggest of malls. One thing I can tell you is I ain't taking calls. Come together right now and try the veal. Look at me. A skinny kid from Brooklyn, New York, from the day back from the days when we couldn't afford shirts, let alone shoulder pads. And now here I am, starring in my own Las Vegas show. You know, I've always dreamed of working in Vegas. Anytime you can get a casino to give you money, you're ahead of the game. You know, people sometimes ask me, Larry, who's the guest you'd like to have on, but could never get? And of course, you know, there's the Pope. We got Brando, so... But the guest I could never really get, although I'd love to talk to him for the full hour, is me. I know, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, I've talked to politicians, to Dan Rather, to astronauts, and people who believe they've had sex with aliens. Some of them believe they had good sex with aliens. But I've never been able to get inside this skin right here. Maybe we'll do a little of that tonight. Maybe you and I will get to know me just a little bit better. And we'll have Jack Singleton's great orchestra and the Larry King Dancers, four of the best-looking topless girls I've ever spent an hour in an Escalade with. So stick around. It's gonna be fun. Come together right now and try the veal. Thank you. Thank you so much. Come together. From the great Beatles. And the veal is good here, ladies and gentlemen. You know, here we are in Las Vegas. Las Vegas. I think Bob Hope once said that's Spanish for roll of quarters. You know who said some weird, far-out things, by the way? Maybe he should be headlining a show here sometime. The great Yogi Berra. Yogi once said, when you see a fork in the road, take it. Yogi once ate at the Chinese restaurant here at Caesars. As a matter of fact, later on a friend asked him, how do you like it? And he said, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. But
excuse me, Mr. King.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Dewey Gordon.
Thanks, Mr. King. I hope you don't mind. I was just down the block rehearsing for the Boys R Us reunion show opening next month at the Rio, and I just thought I'd drop by and wish you luck with your show.
Yeah, Dewey, of course. You had a great solo career. We tried to help you along.
Yeah, you've been great, Mr. King.
Hey, call me Larry.
Well, I guess now that I'm almost 30, maybe I can.
That's funny. 3 years ago, you were 17.
Oh, you got me there. Hey, as long as I'm out here, mind if I join you for a song?
That's something I think we gotta do. Hit it, Jack!
Wow. The great Jack Singleton Orchestra.
Yeah, we got it all.
I'm feeling like an old-timer.
Hey, no. You look like a regular kid.
Yeah. But look at me, I'm up here and I'm swinging.
You know, that's just what Sinatra did.
Okay, then.
You might see Louie and Keeley in the lounges.
Excuse me, what are lounges?
An old timer, you are not. I know I'm from the old school.
You got edge to spare. You got plenty of attitude.
At my age, I'm lucky I got hair.
It doesn't make any difference. Be you old or you young.
Be a kid
or an old timer.
Just be well hung.
can say that on the dinner show.
I guess you can.
It's the new Vegas. Thank you.
The great Dewey Gordon.
I love you, Larry.
Dewey, thank you.
My pleasure.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, you drive into town or you wait for your bags at the airport, what do you see? Billboards for all the big shows here in town. And who are the biggest stars in Vegas these days? It's not the singers or the hookers. Excuse me, the hoofers. It's the magicians. Yeah, you got to do magic in your act to have a big Vegas show these days. So please welcome my special guest, the great anchor from Court TV, to help with an illusion by the great David Copperfield, Miss Nancy Grace.
Hi, Larry.
Nancy, you look gorgeous. What is that you're wearing?
Actually, Larry, it's the dress I prosecuted my first death penalty case in.
Wow. Look at they couldn't fry that guy twice.
So, Larry, just lock me in this box.
Okay, this is a real lock, like from a hardware store or something?
Yep.
Okay. Man, it's lucky Al Gore isn't here. He'd be talking about you being in the lockbox till the deli gets fresh Nova.
Okay, now close the door.
Yeah, but that's your only way of getting air.
I know it.
Okay, I sure hope this place is insured.
Now draw the curtain in front of the box.
Yeah, but then the audience won't be able to see you.
Larry, we rehearsed this.
Okay. Now what?
Now the lights go out.
Whoa. And?
Okay, Larry, open the curtain.
All right.
And here's the box, but I'm invisible.
Nancy, I can see you right in there.
I'm an anchor on Court TV, Larry. I'm invisible.
The great Nancy Grace. She can't make fun of herself, screw her. You know, late Milton Berle used to use this as his theme song. If it was good enough for him, it's good enough for me. There's just one place for me near you. There's just one place to be, and that's near you. I want to thank everybody here at Caesar's Palace for making this show possible. A friendly reminder that tables are open and so are the ATMs. I'll see you on CNN. And
Larry, I can't tell you how sorry I am. I can't be there in person, but I wanted so much to make this videotape. And then, of course, we had a problem with the crew, yeah. But
the great Aaron Brown checking in from Atlanta. I'm Larry King, and like the great Yogi Berra says, it'll never be this late again. Good night.
Please have your ticket and money ready when your valet parker approaches. And now, good night for An Evening with Larry King.
Yeah, it's like you had the best seat in the house, isn't it? Kinda. Kinda like that, ladies and gentlemen. And now, time for a regular feature on the program, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
A leading scientific journal this week retracted a paper it published last year saying that one night's typical dose of the drug ecstasy might cause permanent brain damage. The monkeys and baboons in the study were not injected with ecstasy, but with a powerful amphetamine. That's according to Science magazine. The retraction was submitted by the team at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. A medical school spokesman called the mistake unfortunate, but said that John Ricorte, the researcher who made it, was still a faculty member in good standing whose research is solid and respectable. Actor Johnny Depp said he intended no anti-American sentiment in comparing the nation to a dumb puppy. Where's his apology? There's no apology there. Why, I oughta. A couple in Britain have won an apology after bungling police mistakenly raided their new home during a massive drug crackdown. Frank and Jean Sonley even made their unwanted guests a cup of tea as it emerged that police intelligence was out of date. You know, maybe the cops were just doing drugs. We gotta test them. That's what I'm... that later. A day after Taiwan held its biggest live firing military drill, its defense minister issued a public apology over a torpedo that missed its target and landed ashore. I must say sorry to the president over the drone incident, said red-faced General Chiang Yao-min, over an undestroyed drone found with a cartoon of a pig's head and the president's nickname scribbled on it. And many apologies from the journalistic fraternity this week. A large number of New York Daily News readers contacted the paper to complain about the photograph of the shooting victim at the West Indian New York Daily News? Somebody's Daily News. Sorry. But the West Indian New York Daily News. The shooting victim at the West Indian American Day Carnival Parade on Labor Day. Some callers especially felt the graphic nature of the picture was disrespectful to the parents and other relatives of the victim. The use of the photo was no way intended to offend readers or show disrespect. The news regrets any anguish caused by the publication of the picture. Dear Evite newsletter subscriber, a few days ago we mailed a newsletter to our subscribers with incorrect dates for three important holidays. Please accept our sincerest apologies for these errors. In addition, we wish to apologize for having listed Yom Kippur as one of our reasons to party. We understand and respect that Yom Kippur is a day of atonement, a day to be taken seriously. As such, one of the most important holidays in the Jewish year. Again, we deeply apologize for the error, and thank you for allowing us to make this correction. The Columbus Dispatch says Ohio State University professor Tunk Aldemir's guest column in July contained several substantial passages written by a nuclear energy lobbying group's PR man. The Dispatch says in a story headlined, Betrayal of Trust, editors learned that these same passages in his column had appeared in similar columns attributed to other authors in at least four other newspapers. Clearly, something deceptive was going on. The professor told editors he uses a ghostwriter because his writing is in highly technical language and he needs help writing for a newspaper audience. Says the Dispatch, there's nothing unethical as long as the putative author acknowledges this to his publisher. Aldemir made no such acknowledgments to the Dispatch. What if one of his students, the paper continued to ask, turned in a paper with unacknowledged borrowed passages? No problem, says Aldemir. His rule of thumb is that it isn't plagiarism until it passes 150 words. By the way, newspapers publish, and television stations publish without disclosure, what are called electronic press releases all the time. And who knows where they come from. And finally, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution apologized to readers for using a small picture of Britney Spears kissing Madonna on the front page. The picture, not much bigger than a postage stamp, was near the top of the front page. It showed Spears and Madonna in an open-mouth kiss they shared at the MTV Video Music Awards. The picture elicited a deluge of complaints to the newspaper. Managing editor Hank Kleibenoff apologized, saying the picture should have been inside, not on the front page. He compared the Spears picture to graphic images from the war in Iraq. We ran images we otherwise might not have run, but that was war, and war was news. The photo we ran Friday was neater, and I wish I had limited its display to the inside of the living section, he said. Yeah, that's living, all right. Kissing Madonna. I don't care what sex you are. Kissing Madonna, that's living. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States is going to the United Nations for a new resolution to back more troops, get that coalition up to maybe 30, maybe 35, and more money, more importantly, as the president will ask Congress for $60, $80, $100 billion more for Iraqi reconstruction. It's quite a turnaround for many of the administration's members, above and below ground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
It's been one of the great regrets of my life that I've never been able to attend the Jerry Lewis Telethon in person. Every year it inspires me with its acts of unrequited generosity and perpetual self-effacement, but every year something has gotten in the way. In the 60s, as with the draft, I had other priorities. Then increasingly over the years, my own security requirements just haven't allowed me to mingle with crowds that aren't pre-screened. Even so, just watching it on television in the secure, undisclosed den made me believe this week that maybe we were finally turning the corner into the sunshine and what I like to call Operation Middle East Transformation. That expectation didn't last long. You know, sure, Rumsfeld got some good coverage on his trip to the post-war zone, what I like to call Operation Smiley Face. But when you see that even Joe Lieberman is attacking our Iraq policy, you know that we're past the stages of nuanced control and damage management. We've traversed all the way over to actual problem solution. Well, that's fine. Those of us in the Republican wing of the Republican Party have a precisely calibrated and robust response to the present situation. It's called Operation Let's Roll. And there's not a Democrat alive who could not oppose it. And so, before one smart bomb has burrowed its way halfway up the Ayatollah's hindquarters, we're back on the winning side of the national security issue. But that appears to not be the policy du jour selected, despite my sage counsel, by the constituent-in-chief. So I found myself in the secure undisclosed conversation pit, playing host to a fine general, traumatized by a fine war. Friday, 8:15 a.m.
Mr. Vice President, I'm so pleased you could make time to see me.
Secretary Powell, we may occasionally find ourselves on opposite sides of the fence regarding issues of basic manhood. Still, I admire you greatly, and any time I can carve a window out of my schedule for you, I'm more than...
Oh, fine. I'm on my way up to the UN to speak, so I'll make this brief.
The UN?
Mm-hmm.
Are they still in business? How they doing with the Congo account? They still working that?
Well, I'll tell you what account they're going to be working. The Operation What Do We Do Now account.
I don't believe I follow you.
I believe you do.
Unless you mean Operation Trash the Powell Doctrine.
Doctrine's looking pretty good. What do you figure a halfway decent exit strategy would be worth right about now?
Things are getting better every day.
Some things. Some are getting worse every day, and even more things are staying the same every day. So, I've been given a mandate by the President to make the United Nations relevant again.
Mr. Secretary, I'm beginning to wish I hadn't gone to the Reliant Energy Suite at the NFL opener last night. You mean to say the President is actually proposing that we turn any degree of military command and control over to some cheese eater or chocolate maker or curry farmer? Can you do me a favor, please, sir? Can you tell me the name of one country that's produced generals that you'd trust with lives of young American boys and girls in uniform?
Poland.
He's being trusted with the lives of young Outer Mongolians. Query whether they have uniforms.
Mr. Vice President, you know as well as I do that we're perfectly capable of crafting some diplomatic language that will assuage the command freaks of old Europe while still preserving the essential parts of the status quo. The alternative is to get troop assistance only from countries that have no troops. And we think that's counterproductive.
Has Condi signed off on this?
Condi is in fingerprint removal mode at the moment.
Mr. Vice President, I'll say this as plainly as I know how. You bear supreme responsibility for the lack of temporal... I know how to say this more plainly. Because of your insistence on dotting the diplomatic I's and T's, we lost a crucial few months. The time we were supposed to go through this challenging phase of the operation was late last spring, not 13 and a half months before Election Day. Back then, we could have glided through this like a suntan starlet through the big pool at Caesar's. Now...
Mr. Vice President, I really didn't come here to argue with you.
Well, that's good. We need this room in half an hour. Lynn's ghostwriting Judge Roy Moore's book, and they...
This decision has been made above our pay grade.
Mr. Secretary, it's very easy to remedy. Hello, Shawarma. Give me the President, please.
This decision has been made above his pay grade.
Never mind, Shawarma. Mr. Secretary, you may be being too clever by half if you're intimating that Karl Rove has decided it's time for us to become Bill Clinton internationalistas, kissing the asses of every blue-helmeted bureaucrat who's got diplomatic plates. It just might interest you to know that it was Carl who's sending me up to the 9/11 commemoration ceremony in New York this week. And do you seriously think Carl is the kind of person who'd put me in that very public situation while simultaneously putting my cojones on eBay?
Mr. Vice President, welcome to the world I'm just leaving. I'll let myself out.
You can try. Maybe that last little bit of gratuitous swagger wasn't entirely appropriate, given the fact that he did suddenly have the code to let himself in. But if we forswear the use of gratuitous swagger the minute times get tough, then indeed, the terrorists have won. End of partial diary for September 4th, 2003. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 And this just in, ladies and gentlemen, news of the digital wonderland. WOTV, Channel 41 in Battle Creek, Michigan, has closed its Battle Creek news operation, laying off 24 staffers and leaving the serial city without a locally anchored news program. The station's money troubles weren't helped after it spent nearly $2 million last year to upgrade to digital transmission capability. News doesn't look good in digital anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And we'd be just like having enough troops if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you, alrighty? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. Playlists for the show usually available at harryshearer.com. What's that word again? Oh yeah, literacy. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates from KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.